Welcome to Burning the Ships podcast. I'm your host, Jason Seward. And today, before we get into the episode, as we do every episode, we got JJ's joke of the week. But I got a very special surprise. Most of you are listening to this or not watching the video, but we have JJ live and in the flesh to tell his joke this week. So I'm going to turn it over to JJ, and JJ, tell us joke of the week.
Why did the student eat his homework? Because his teacher said it was a piece of cake.
That was good. That was good. So that's JJ's joke of the week. Now we'll get into the episode. Today I've got my buddy, Tim Olson, on the show. Tim and I met through a mastermind we were both a part of, and he's got a fascinating story. I'm not going to spoil it. I'm going to let him get into it in the episode, but a couple things that stood out to me, or that have always stood out about Tim, and you guys will hear more about it in the episode, but he is a dreamer. He's got big visions, big plans, and he kind of has this ability to dream it to be reality, right? And he'll get into that really towards the end of the episode. He kind of unveils some big goals that he has and stuff like that in there. You guys have probably heard me talk about BHAG, big, hairy, audacious goals, and Tim has plenty of those, so he'll share those in the episode. Genuine guy, he is a go-getter, a master networker. He does a fantastic job, like with all the dreams he has and goals he has. He does a great job articulating those to his network, and really leveraging that to bring in, you know, really creative partnerships and stuff like that. His most recent venture, and he'll get into it, is Aspire Capital. And it is basically like a lending company for equipment financing and stuff like that. And I'll let him, you know, talk about that in the episode. But again, Tim Olson, he's a rock star, an up-and-coming billionaire. I mean, this guy has really big dreams, and I have no doubt and what he is, what his vision is, and I have faith that he'll pull it off and make big things happen with all that he has going on. So I hope you guys enjoy our interview as much as I enjoyed having it. And with that, we'll turn it over to Tim Olson. JJ, tell the folks bye-bye.
Hi.
Tim Olson, welcome to Burning the Ships, my man. Good to have you.
Yeah, good to be here. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep, you are. We were just talking before we started recording. We are about to get bombarded with about a foot of snow is what they're saying, which is not normal for us in Virginia, but this is what you live in constantly in Minnesota, right?
It is, yeah.
What's the temperature? What's the temperature there?
Negative 15 right now, Jason.
Beautiful. I don't know that I've ever seen negative 15.
No, without wind chill, too. So it's,
yeah.
It's cold.
Yeah. At some point, it's got to be like, it just gets to a point where it all feels the same, right?
It does, yeah. And yeah, you can still actually cold plunge outside in the weather, and it feels warm. So
yeah, you probably know that. I'm a big cold plunger, but I just use my pool in my backyard. I don't know that I would be able to get in the pool because of so much ice on it if it was negative 15. So
yeah,
yeah, but no, man, it's good to have you on. We've been trying to coordinate this, get our schedules jived up the last few months, and I'm glad we have. I'm excited to talk to you about kind of some new ventures that you've gotten into, and talk shop about like your story and how you've gotten from where you were to where you are and what you got on the horizon. So it's good to have you on. I think the best way to kickstart it, Tim, is I'm gonna turn it over to you and just let you introduce yourself to the folks, kind of your background and things like that, and then I'll tee up a bunch of questions after that. So,
okay, sounds great.
So professionally, I started my career back in 2013, 2012 at US Bank. And what I did there was working as a business banker or small business specialist and working with Main Street banks or Main Street businesses, basically, you know, companies that are coming in that are startups to 10, 15 million in revenue. So helping them out with their banking relationship. And from there, I progressed into the equipment financing specifically in 2017. And then 2020, winter of 2021 is when I started with a startup equipment finance company. Wasn't looking to make the change or anything, but was networking, as I love to do, and we'll touch on that later and the importance of that. But while networking, I met a gentleman that was starting this company and more of a nationwide focus and more upmarket, larger deal sizes with larger revenue-sized companies. So took that opportunity, and it went super well. It was a great shop, great people, and it's been on my head and heart for a while. You know, where you and I met in Legacy Family was probably fall of 2022, maybe the summer right before that. I can't remember the exact time I started, but it's been in my head and heart to just jump into like some sort of entrepreneurial path, because I just wanted to be able to control my direction. And what I was doing for the last 7 years was 100% commission paid. So it's like, well, hey, if I'm already taking the risk to an extent, why not jump all the way in and see what's possible? So, and the person that
Well, I've got a few questions. So equipment financing, and we're going to get pretty deep into this, because I know that's, you know, where we're kind of tracking towards on the timeline. But what, you know, you left U.S. Bank in 2017, started working in equipment financing. What was that, just the opportunity that was in front of you at the time, or did you seek that out? Like, was there something that drew you to equipment financing?
Great question. So where I was at in my time with U.S. Bank was, it's a really great bank to get started in banking if you're not coming from like an accounting major or a master's in accounting or anything like that. But when it comes to moving up, it takes some time. And a recruiter had reached out and just started introducing me to other banks that were more on a community and regional level. But then I was presented the opportunity to meet with a regional equipment finance company, which we can get into the differentiators between them and banks. But I just found it really unique that, you know, I would be coming in to support and assist a business on one particular need rather than the whole business. And by doing that, I saw it as a way to support a lot of banks and be, you know, an arrow in their quiver for when they need equipment financing, but they don't have comfort around that opportunity.
Right. So that makes perfect sense. And then you went in, you mentioned it was, you know, between that and then where you ended up going in 2020, you said it was primarily commission based. So were you originating loans? Were you selling the product? Is that what your role was in these companies?
Yeah, the role from 2017 and then my second stint as an equipment group was both as an originator, sales. Yep. So customer facing, getting out in the field. And the differentiator between the two, really, Jason, was that the first equipment shop was more of a regional focus on Minnesota and the surrounding states, whereas the second one was more on a national scale.
Okay. Gotcha.
But yeah, customer facing, prospect facing, trying to build out a partnership with, or a relationship, I should say, with bankers and CPAs and attorneys. And then that's where referrals come from. So,
right. Yeah. And I'm always curious, like when I walk through on this podcast, when I walk through people's timelines, I'm curious as like where you were psychologically through the timeline. So
yes,
you're selling this product, and that is active income. And we'll get into it a little bit, but that's fast money, right? That's your quick money. It's paying the bills. It's 100% commission based. You don't own anything. You're just getting paid for what you produce. Yep. I know eventually, you know, we'll get into what you're doing now, but you talked about like in 2022, you got into this mastermind, you started thinking more like an entrepreneur. But from that 2017, 2020 timeline, as you were learning the business and selling this product, was there any part of you thinking, I've got to get creative and figure out how to build a business around this skill set and this? Were you thinking that way already at that point?
Yeah, it definitely. When I started in 2017, one of the owners of the company was just handed me a laptop and said, hey, go build a book of business and what we call COIs, Center of Influences. And no, that's it. So just go build.
Right.
And then from there, I'm a very extroverted relationship person and love to focus on those two, just building relationships over, you know, events and stuff like that. So I'd go out to associations and corporate gatherings and sporting events,
yeah,
to meet folks and get to know, like, and trust people, and they could do the same with me, right? And then it was in 2022, really over the time where it built up, that, hey, if I'm putting all this time and effort into it, like, there's got to be another way to streamline the process out there, get more efficient, get a better process, find, get in the room that other people are doing the same thing, if not better, most likely, and just be in a room that I wasn't supposed to be in. So,
yeah, no, I love that mentality, and I'll kind of pump you up on this, because that's what stood out. You mentioned when we met, and I don't remember which Legacy Summit it was, but I've been fortunate enough to get to know you through that mastermind. But one thing that stood out, a couple things with you, and I don't know if this is natural to you or you've worked hard to develop this skill, but it's what you were just talking about. You don't just, from my perspective, you don't just join the group and then hope that through osmosis you're going to pick up all these relationships and stuff. You are super proactive, man. Even like when I met you, it wasn't just, hey, I'm Tim, hey, I'm Jason. You continued that correspondence. You would, when we would share stuff we're doing on social media, you would share it to your network, which you're all the way across the country, you know, or, you know, halfway across the country, but you would still share it. You would reach out with questions. You would reach out with advice. You would, and I saw you not just with me, but with everybody in that group. And that was just one group I was, you know, in with you, where you were, it wasn't fake. You were genuinely curious at what everybody else was doing. You were trying to not only learn from them, but provide some type of value so that you weren't just always consuming. You were actually trying in whatever way you could fit in and provide something, even if it was just having a conversation, to hear what they were doing. Like, that's giving value. So kudos to you, because I know, kind of as you walk us through your timeline, that one skill set of not being afraid to just immerse yourself from a relationship standpoint has led you to the relationships you have now with this new venture that you're in. And we'll get into that in a minute. Would you agree that that's been your probably number one contributor to where you're at now?
Yeah, I definitely would. And I really appreciate that, because
yeah,
I don't notice that a lot until someone points it out, which is very...
No, it's 100%, you know, and I think I speak for a lot of people that have gotten to know you, that you stand out in that arena, for sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I just... My father says he was always known for the ability to just talk to a tree or ask questions and listen. You know, it's just, I am curious. I just... And sometimes, you know, with my wife and I, she's like, why are you asking? Like, I'm actually genuinely curious. Like, tell me how this works, you know? So, it was awesome, because you'd meet all sorts of different people in that group. But then at the end of the day, too, it's like, yes, we're all looking to put food on our table and gas in our tank, but I just love connecting people. And if, you know, if there's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, why isn't there 6 degrees of Tim Olson, you know?
Yeah, so, no. It's funny, man. I haven't shared this story with you, but I wish I could remember where we were and what we were talking about. But it was my business partner, Bill Phillips, and I, we got back from one of the summits. It might have been Chicago. I don't know. But we were talking about new people we met and stuff like that. And I said, probably the best, but also for my personality, the most difficult conversation I had was with Tim Olson. And the reason was, you are much like myself. When I'm meeting somebody new and talking to them, I'm so curious. I don't want to talk a single second about what I'm doing. I want to hear about what you're doing. Yeah. And yours and my conversation, I don't remember exactly what we were talking about, but we were both ping-ponging questions back and forth to each other. Like, tell me about what you do. And then you would talk a little bit about it, and then you would deflect and try to ask questions about me. And we did that back and forth where we barely found out anything about each other, because that's a good trait. Like, that, I'm saying that as a good thing, but you naturally are curious and it's genuine. You don't want to go into every room talking about all the things you're doing. You want to help, you want to learn and all that good stuff. So,
you people are doing that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. Yep. And my son and I, so you mentioned your wife, my wife, like I drive her crazy because I'm always just inquisitive about everything. And a lot of times at the end of the day, she's a teacher. She teaches a second grade class. She's just done talking. And she's like, I just got nothing left in the tank. But my son and I are exactly alike. We're both curious. He's 8 years old. And we're just like fighting to get the next question in, you know, everything we're doing. So anyway, it's good. So
I want before we leave that topic, it's something that I try to actively practice. And it did take time. And I honestly think it goes back to like when President Barack Obama took office. If you listen to how he speaks, he's very intentional. He has no filler words. He allows space and he listens. And I've also learned over time, if you let people speak more often than you are within the conversation, they walk away from that interaction as a positive interaction because people like to hear themselves speak. But it is something I actively have to do, like to this day, where it's like, just allow space, listen until there's space, and then gather my thoughts and respond, you know? So
yeah,
it's just great to learn people too and learn about them, you know?
I remember I've shared this story before on the podcast, but I'll share it again. I was at my grandfather. He passed away in 2016. So I was at his funeral and one of his buddies came up to me that I had never met, but came up to me at the funeral or after the funeral. He was just talking about my grandfather. He said, Jason, one thing that that your grandfather always did that stood out, and I can tell it just talking to you, he was talking to me. He said, when you talked to him, he made you feel like you were the only person on the planet because he was laser focused on what you had to say. He wasn't trying to interrupt everything you had to say. He just made every single person from the homeless guy on the street to a CEO of a company, they felt like the whole world revolved around him in that conversation or them. And that's how my that was almost 10 years ago, and it is in my mind every conversation I have. I want to be that way. I want to make people walk away from conversations. I can tell you the same way, where they never have a single doubt whether I was paying attention or not, whether I was locked in and I was genuinely concerned and cared about and interested in what they had to say. So it's we could talk another hour on that, but it's a cliche quote, but people don't remember what you say. They remember how you made them feel. Right. And if you can make somebody in a conversation feel important and feel like you were paying attention and you were interested, that's great. And you do that enough times, it compounds over time and all that stuff comes back one way or another to help you in your journey, you know?
Right.
So, yep. So, I want to get into, you alluded, you said, we talked a little bit earlier when you were just straight commission, and I'm going somewhere with this in the timeline, but you talked about you were commission only. That is the definition of fast money, right? And you and I both know Chris Rood and think a lot of like his overall messaging and stuff like that. And he talks about this concept. I want you to kind of, and I haven't talked about it much because it's not my concept, right? And I look forward to having Chris on here eventually, but he talks about fast money, medium money, or, you know, and then the slow money. Elaborate on that, because I know you believe in that philosophy.
Yeah. Well, he's getting a lot of praise and his name is spreading in Minnesota because everyone I tell about it, I first say fast money, medium money, slow money. And it's Chris Root. Go follow him. And for me, through the mastermind that we're a part of in Legacy Family, I actually had the opportunity to get to know Kelly Garrett, as you know very well. And I was calling her last summer after I had left the equipment finance industry, and I was looking to acquire companies. And long story short, after a couple conversations with Kelly, you know her, she's like, hey, let's challenge you to be the best that you could be and like lean into what you know. And so we started an equipment finance company called Aspire Finance. So that's my fast money and that's my day to day, and puts food on the table and gas in the tank, as I say, and is what I really want to create my legacy from. And then prior to her and I speaking, a business partner and I were looking at acquiring companies, which is a very long play. It's not a quick play. So that's my medium money. We're looking at companies that are, you know, 2 million EBITDA to 10 million EBITDA that are manufacturing focused, maybe distribution services. And we got a few in the hopper.
but it's a long play. And then my slow money is I raise capital for passive investors from medium income to high income earners and invest with a group called Rise 48 Equity out of Scottsdale. So it's been really great. And I'll even add in the reason I joined Legacy Family was because I knew that I wanted to find a path to buy back time. And that was going to best be served, I thought, through real estate. But I didn't want to buy and operate and do the day-to-day, I found, because my traits and my personality are best served customer-facing and out in the field, is what I like to say. So why not partner with an operator that has a successful track record? You know, they've purchased over $2 billion in assets. They've never missed a debt payment or a projection. And it's been going swimmingly. So, but it, when I look at that fast, medium, and slow, that's also my time allocatement during the week, right? Fast money is, it's a lot of my time. It's the breadth of my time in my week. And then the medium and slow are accordingly. So,
yeah, I love every bit of that, and I want to unpack it. So yeah. let's start with Aspire Finance. So, it's a natural progression for you. You spent so many years in equipment financing. That's why I asked the question earlier. Were you thinking like, how do I turn this into a business that I own and control? And it looks like you found your path to that through Aspire. So let's talk about that a little bit. How is it structured? And from a, you know, from an operational standpoint, how is it structured? And what products do you offer? Who's your avatar as far as a client goes? Are you raising capital? Things like that. Just kind of give us the nuts and bolts as much as you can share.
Yeah. So there's always equipment opportunities out there for companies that are a couple million in revenue to several billion in revenue that banks don't have a credit appetite for. And there's a multitude of reasons why. Some of the easier ones to understand for someone that's not in finance is if you're working with a community bank or a regional bank, every bank is regulated and has a credit limit, right? So let's say a bank has $1 billion in assets and their credit limit hypothetically is $20 million. It's more, but I'm just using easy numbers.
Yeah.
While their regulatory limit is $20 million, their comfort limit internally is more like $10 to $13 million. So now if you look at that as an example and you have a $50 million revenue company working with that bank, you put in a real estate loan, some equipment, you know, trucks, a line of credit, you're already at $7, $8, $9 million in debt with the company. With a bank that has a comfort limit of about 10 to 13 million, right? So that's where they're like, it's opportunistic for me to know those bankers so that when the company comes to the bank and says, hey, we need to buy another $2 million of equipment because it's going to add additional revenue. And the bank's like, you know, we're good right now. We're comfortable because that bank, or excuse me, that business is also maybe going to do an M&A transaction. Well, they want to leave available powder for future credit opportunities. So they would be wise to bring me in so that another bank doesn't get in there, right? So that's one reason, for example. Another reason is we do financing or leasing at 100% of cost. So when you ask about the products that we offer, we do a traditional equipment finance agreement, which is like an equipment loan. And we also provide capital lease structures, which is just a dollar buyout at the end. And then lastly, we do your traditional lease where it's the business is truly renting the equipment and Aspire Finance owns it and has title to it. And then at the end of the term, that business has the opportunity to buy it out, keep renting, return it to the vendor and get something new. So what drives their desire for either of those products is where they're at in their growth cycle for the business. What's the asset going to do for the business? Is it a short-term or midterm or long-term asset? Where's the innovation at within that industry for that specific piece of equipment? Is there something new that's coming out in 3-4 years and they don't want to own it? They just want to lease it because they're going to buy something new in 3-4 years. So a lot of that stuff you kind of got to think about and not just put someone into a product and just move on because it doesn't fit them for everyone. So,
yep. So I've got a million questions, but I'll
just start everything that you ask, but you could go.
No. It's great. I love this because I've been aware and let me go back a little bit. You know, when you launched Aspire Finance, you have partnered up with a powerhouse team to do so. in particular, I have worked directly with Kelly Garrett. She has been, I mean, I would say her and Angela Dunn have been the most critical piece of 608B Capital's launch, right? They held our hand in our first year in business. And I mean, I joke with them, but they helped structure and build a competitor to their own main company, right? So that goes to show just how genuine of people they are, right? And they, I remember Kelly early on saying, because I brought that up, I was like, Kelly, we want you to build what you have, right? We want you to help us build what you have. So we realize and recognize you're building a competitor. And she said, and I'm paraphrasing, but something along the lines of like, there's enough sunshine for all of us. There's enough cake for all of us. And so that abundance mindset, I say all that to say you are in very good hands in that partnership with her and then the others. Start there with some of my questions is when you had this idea, did you take it to them with, hey, here's my idea. Let's figure out a way we can collaborate and make something happen together. Was that kind of where it started there? Or
no, it started very similar to your story. I called Kelly as I had left my employer and was like, hey, a friend and I are looking at starting a private capital fund here for fix and flippers. And so I called Kelly to catch up about it. And long story short, she's like, Tim, I'll tell you everything you need to know. But first, why don't you tell me about equipment financing? And she started asking questions. She started like, and I could hear her. We were on a call. I could just hear her brain work and like, okay. Yep. And she just goes, Tim, I'll tell you everything you need to know about starting a private capital fund. But why don't we start something that you already know and you have a network around? And that was a really great point that she brought that I just was kind of overlooking. And probably because I had spent 7 years in the business, right? I'm like, oh, I want to go try something new. Well, this is definitely new being in, you know, the managing partner seat, not just the sales seat. A lot of stuff I need to learn, a lot of stuff I got to build out. Yeah. And so when I talked with her about that, I said, you know what, let's do that. And so I went down to Charleston and I met up with Whit, Danny, and Dan. Fantastic guys. And those four are just awesome. And after collaborating in person with them and sharing what I was looking to do and what I had done and where they started asking questions about how could we be, you know, strategically value to the marketplace, not just in Charleston and not just in Minnesota, but nationwide, there's a need out there. And so the five of us put this group together and said, you know what, let's do that. So it's been awesome and they're super supportive. And, you know, I love that sun analogy. I haven't heard that before, and that's the case here. Could I have done this on my own and started my own equipment group? Yes. But what don't I have? I don't have partnerships that are keeping me accountable. You know, passiveinvesting.com is one of the many other businesses. And, you know, we have a full back office. We have an accounting team, a marketing team, an HR team. And so when I stepped back and I looked at what it would take for me to build out an equipment finance company, working with them eliminated a lot of the positions that I would need to build out. But then more importantly, it would bring a lot of gas to the fire and with their network. And that's where it's like, you know what? A biteable watermelon is much more than a grape, right? Tim says, oh, it's in Rat says that all the time. Yeah. I love it because it's like, sure, I could own 100% of a company over here, but look at everything I need to do to build that out to hopefully be successful versus here, like, I'm kind of starting, I'm already rounding first base or even coming up on second, right? And we're just starting just because of,
It gives you the luxury of having ownership, right? You're a managing partner. You have ownership and equity in this company, but it also at the same time allows you to focus on what you're good at and you don't have to manage all these other things. You don't have to figure out like, I mean, you don't have to learn how to delegate. There's things within this business that are already delegated, like it's naturally there. And I love that how you've structured that because to your point, it would have been a much higher rate of or risk of failure if you had just said, all right, I'm starting Aspire Finance. Whoever wants to join, join, but I'm going to make it happen because you would have so much to do with the cumbersomeness of building out just the structure of it all and not being able to focus on the main thing that you're good at, you know. And I love that you had the foresight to connect with them, or maybe Kelly pulled that out of you, but whatever it was, I think you've landed in a good space there. For us, very similar in the sense of, now we obviously are a hard money lending fund, but it's three partners, right? Myself, Tim Blodgett, and Bill Phillips. And we all have, we've structured it in a way where we all three can focus on what we are really good at, right? Mm-hmm. And if any one of us were to have done this alone and had to, like when we started it and launched it, there was no income, zero. We had to raise capital to make loans to then get the income. And now it's rolling. But if I started this alone and I had to focus on all the operational things, this thing would have blown up before a penny would have come in the door, because that's not my strength. My strength is raising the capital and then turning everything and finding borrowers and then turning it over to the next person. And so the way you've structured that, man, I think it's genius. And I know that, like, instantly you have a foundation there to build something amazing on. So I kudos on that. So that's the fast money. The medium money, buying companies and things like that. Kind of want to hear a little bit more about that and kind of where your head is and where, like, the types of businesses you're looking to do and the exits that you're kind of projecting on those types of businesses.
Yeah, that really was stemmed from Legacy Family again. Mark Evans, you know, I met him there and we just got to chatting, and studies show, obviously, the amount of businesses that are coming to market is astounding because the amount of people that are retiring, right? And
yep.
I can't remember the stat, if it was like 1 in 8 or, you know, 2 in 8. Like, a lot of companies are not going to be sold. They're just going to be closed doors, and they're profitable businesses right now. So when you looked at that, and in the equipment finance space too, I'm sitting across the table from decision makers, usually owners, sometimes CFOs. And part of my discovery within what is called KYC, Know Your Customer, is tell me about the business. Tell me who's running it, who's managing it, how long have they had it? What's the transition look like if it's an older ownership group? Who's coming in to run it, right? And then you start finding, like, I had a conversation actually last spring while I was still at my previous employer before any of this changed. 105-year-old scrap metal company, north of $150 million, 78-year-old owner, no succession plan. I'm like, what?
Right.
Like, who's going to buy that? So sure, you can go to market, but when you look at private equity, we didn't want to do just your normal plain private equity, churn and burn financial results and move on, you know, tear up the leadership group, improve it, and then sell it. We want to focus on culture. And that's why I work with, you know, the partners that I do at Aspire Finance as well, is I want to do life with people and enjoy it with people. I love that. I'm a very relationship person. And so our group is called Marin Investment Partners, M-A-R-R-I-N. So Leah Barron started that last February, and she has a background of private equity, and she was a CFO, a chief administration officer, so super smart and super, like, just a lot of deals in her belt, and she's seen a lot. So when we're looking at opportunities out there, we're seeing that there's a lot off market. People don't want to go to your typical private equity group. And we truly want to focus on culture and people, because McKinsey, which is a large consulting firm, actually has done a study. If you focus and invest on your culture, you're typically going to 4X your revenue and growth. Just, if you've heard of Traction or EOS, same mind thing, same mindset. Right people in the right seats. You know, you might have to move some people, right? But you don't need to, like, tear up the leadership team and move them around and fire up. No, like, let's just move them in a different position, maybe. And maybe you want to be in sales. Maybe they don't, they're not extroverted. They want to be in, you know, operations or accounting, right? Yep. So the companies that we're looking at, and sorry to be long-winded, but it's just,
you're good.
Topic is, you know, like right now we're looking at a scrap metal company, not that one I referenced, but a different one. Looking at a woman-owned electrical contractor, looking at a couple manufacturing companies. So very slow go about it right now. You know, we would envision a hold time of anywhere from 3 to 7 years. We're an independent sponsor right now, or a fundless sponsor. So we would be raising deal by deal. But when I have the opportunity, the last thing I would say, to sit across from a decision maker and talk about equipment financing and then find in the discovery that there's no succession plan, why not have a follow-up conversation about like,
so good, man.
You know what I mean? And
yeah,
with my network and Leah's network, it's all about who do you know and how can they provide value if you can pull this operator in there to be the CEO. A company that Marin Investment Partners closed on actually was in St. Louis. It's a contract manufacturer we closed on in January. We found an operator that has 3 decades of experience in the food manufacturing business. He's the CEO. He knows that, right? Like the back of his hand. But we came across a family that just was not in the right position to continue owning it and wanted to get out and rolled over some equity. And here we go. So,
yeah, you read my mind, because as you were talking about, you know, everything, I'm thinking, dude, your Aspire, your fast money vehicle is the perfect networking source to find, because you're going to be dealing with people that are using you for financing their equipment. They're going to be having these conversations about what their next 5-10 years look like, or maybe next 2 years, and they don't know what to do, and you can offer them another solution.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that, man. I am so intrigued. We're just scratching the surface on it ourselves, but and I know it's a hot topic now, but buying these businesses from all the boomers that are retiring and not knowing, you know, and I cannot remember which podcast or interview I heard recently, but somebody laid it out in a way that it was so, I comprehended it so well. I was like, what am I doing? I've got to jump in here. And basically they gave the example of like, let's say you're buying a $10 million business. Okay. That's the valuation on it. And it's up and running. It's got all the people operating it, but the owner, might be one of the operators. They're just tired and ready to get out of it. They're looking for a solution. You can go this, and it's not this simple, but the math is this simple. You can go get an SBA loan to buy that business with 5% down. Let's say it's a $10 million business. You're out of pocket, whether you your own cash or you raise the capital, but you're out of pocket $500,000 to acquire this business, or possibly the seller could carry back some of that. There's different ways to structure that. All you have to do, to your point earlier, is make sure the culture is good within that business. You know, maybe restructure. Sometimes you don't even have to. All you have to do over the next 5 to 7 years, pay that $10 million principal down, or whatever, you know, the 9.5. You don't have to increase revenue. You don't have to do anything. You don't even have to change the culture, but that principal pay down over the next 5-7 years, assuming no appreciation to value, and then you sell it. Now you've paid down the principal, say, to $6.5-7 million.
Yeah.
And now you sell it for $10 million. You've just netted $3 million, and all you've done is transacted on taking over a business, made sure at a high level the culture stays good, and worst case scenario, if you just sustain the level of revenue that it had when you bought it, you're gonna make very good returns on that initial $500,000 investment. That's as simple as it gets. Now, it's not that simple, but it can be, you know.
Yes, it can be for sure. Yes.
Yep. So I love that. And again, I mean, we're just scratching the surface trying to, I mean, we're heads down focused on our lending company now, but you know, as we're able to delegate more with that, that's an area we're definitely going to be looking at. So now let's talk about the slow money. Go ahead.
My day-to-day is Aspire. And when those opportunities pop, that's when Leah and I review them, because she's also got her day-to-day as a CFO consultant. So
yeah,
that's why we can take time and we don't have to go to the market and talk to brokers and talk to investment bankers to overbid on deals. It's like, we have all the time. We just want to find the right opportunities. So
right. Yeah. That's it. And there's plenty of them out there, and you've got the skill set of knowing how to talk to people, knowing how to ask the right questions, knowing how to not be a car salesman and really get in there and find value for both sides, and then see if the numbers, I mean, it's a math problem. Every single thing we do in business is a math problem on the back end of building relationships. And if the two jive, then you got something. So, slow money. I want to hear about that. I am intrigued what you're doing here.
Yeah. So as I alluded to earlier, I was joining Legacy Family as I wanted to learn more about real estate and its opportunity to create wealth. And I realized I didn't want to start single family, duplex, quadplex, which is not a bad way. to do that at all. I just wanted to go bigger, quicker. Like them or not, the Grant Cardone model, right? If you have a 50-unit property and 10 people move out, you're still at 80%. You know, you're good. But if you have a duplex and a guy moves out or a gal moves out, you got, you know, you've lost 50%.
Yep.
So in that circle and in that group is when I realized, and that my time was best spent, similar to yourself, is that's in front of people and building relationships. And there's a guy here locally, I got to give him credit, Jeremy Dyer in Minnesota, that started a group called Starting Point Capital. And he's got a couple partners in it. And I heard him talk in the summer of 23 at an event here locally. And not until maybe that winter did we actually touch base. And that's when he's like, hey, Tim, have you ever thought about just raising capital? And this all kind of ties together. And the reason is I'm looking to meet with, you know, medium income earners, to high income earners to, you know, diversify their investments. And so many people that you and I know that are very heavily invested in their 401k or IRA, it's all in the stock market. Like, and then, you know, the power of a self-directed IRA that is just starting to be talked about more and more and more because people are realizing that you can, you know, Peter Thiel, you know, perfect exception to the rule, but he's got what, $12 billion or $8 billion in his self-directed IRA. So when I met Jeremy at Starting Point Capital, I love the idea of partnering with an operator, which is very important, finding the right operator to invest with. And they have a track record successfully of having purchased over $2 billion in assets and multifamily specifically. They know their buy box. And more specifically, I love that they know their markets. And it's three markets. It's Phoenix, Dallas, and Charlotte. That's it for now. So yeah. when you're that targeted and niched, you can, you know, build economies of scale. Which construction group, property management, you bring a lot of those expenses in-house, right? Just like if you're running any type of business, or if I'm looking to buy a business, or if I'm working with a company to finance their equipment, what's their biggest expenses? Can you bring that in-house? Can you buy a company that provides that service? So you're actually just paying yourself, right? So that's what I love about Rise 48. And we raise with them through Starting Point Capital, and we just do a fund-to-fund model. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, is how you're structured in that. So it's fund to fund and you're getting just some equity in the deal. Correct? Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. You get a percentage for what you raise, and then sometimes potentially a promote on the back end if and when it exits. And in this last few years, right, we've seen quite a few real estate investors just go upside down because they bought properties haphazardly and it was at 3%, and now they're coming due, you know. Our whole portfolio at Rise 48, I think, is maybe 60% loan to value, 63% loan to value. So it's super, super comfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. And you see the same stuff I do, and you just alluded to it about, you know, it goes to the importance of you really, really got to get to know the operators of deals that you invest in. So, and the reason that's so important, like I'm invested in a couple syndication deals with a couple different operators. But I spent a long time getting to know them, like not just getting to know them, but like getting to know their teams, having dinner with them, having drinks with them, getting to know their family, seeing how they operate just day to day, where it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. I don't know if it was before we started recording or now, but you've got to build that reputation and get people to know, like, and trust you, right? And if you're building a reputation over time as somebody that runs away when things get tough, then that's not somebody I want to invest with. I want to invest with the person that is forward-facing. They take full ownership when things get crappy, and they fight through it. And even when things are – because every – I'm thinking through it. I think every syndication that I'm a part of right now over the last 2 years has had some kind of bumps in the road, right? But every single one of them, the operator came to the investor group and said, here's what we're facing. Insurance costs are going up. This is going on. We had this claim, whatever. Here's how we're going to address it.
Yep.
We might have to pause distributions, but we're going to, you know, we'll catch up when things get back normal cash flow, and they have. And that's the operator that I want to be in business with. So from your standpoint, aligning with those type of operators, it makes your job raising capital and connecting the the people with the self-directed money and all this, you know, the capital they're looking for investments. If you've got a good operating team that you can vouch for and sell to these investors, you're in a great middle position there for sure. So
yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I always say, you know, communicate quick and communicate bad news quicker, right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Rip it up, rip the bandaid off. And you just start realizing once you approach, you know, not even problems, but I would even, I've tried rebranding them myself just to opportunities. You know, when an issue arises or an opportunity arises, just address it real quick. And like, how's it fix it? Cool, right? And it's some of the most successful people are the quickest to react and the quickest to react with the less information, right? Usually, I think, I can't remember the study, similar to yourself, you absorb so many podcasts and information,
yeah.
But it's out there that, you know, the most successful people only have 60 to 70% of the information available before they make a decision. And they just move. You know, they've already failed three times before other parties have even made a decision, right? So, like,
yep.
You just start moving.
Well, it's the mindset that it can get you in some dicey situations, but I still wholeheartedly believe in this mindset, and it's got to be done responsibly. But the like ready, fire, aim mentality, like just dive in, and through enough reps, you will have, more than anything else, the confidence to know that you can solve the problems, right? You just dive in, figure things out, own them. That's the biggest thing. A lot of people, most people, unfortunately, when things get south, it's this finger pointing, you know, making excuses, stuff like, just own it. Like, okay, somebody in my bubble screwed up. That's okay. It's my bubble, though, and I've got to own it, right? So it's my fault. I'm going to fix it, and here's how I'm going to do it. And I appreciate everyone that trusts me to get through it, right? And that's the type of operator you want. So, dude, I love every bit of that. I love how you kind of look at it from those buckets of, and what I love even more is that's advice you got, 3 years ago at a mastermind from, or however long ago it was.
Yeah.
And it stuck with you. You've acted upon it, and now you've structured your businesses and everything you're involved with to go back and fulfill that mindset nugget that was given to you a couple of years ago. I love every bit of that, man. Yep. Yeah. Now I want to get into the fun stuff. Let's start here. You have an English bulldog. Is that correct?
An English, and you maybe heard him walk in. Yeah, an English.
I did. That's what made me think of it.
I got to trim his nails, but yeah.
What's his name?
Hogarth.
Hogarth.
Disney movie, Iron Giant. Yeah.
Yep. Hogarth. Okay. Oh. I'm on my second English named Banks. My first one was Roscoe.
I love that.
I have two children that I love to death.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to compare my dog to my children, but English bulldogs have given me so much joy in life, man. I just love. I know y'all rescued a Frenchie at one point, didn't you? I remember seeing.
Great memory. So we rescued a French. So Hogarth is 10 and a half.
Yeah.
When he was about 3, we rescued a French bulldog and her name was Sophie. And unfortunately we came back from Iceland in June and the day before we got back, she passed away. So, that was tough when we got home and you run inside and you're like, Sophie, and
my first English Roscoe lived. He died when he was 13, which is long life for a bulldog, really? You know. Now, selfishly, the last year of his life, I probably just because I wanted him around, I kept him too long. You know, he was in miserable shape. But we've gotten a second one now. But I could spend another hour talking about bulldogs, but I had to bring that up because, you know, it's there.
So when we got home on Tuesday from Iceland and Sophie passed, we brought her to the vet. That night, my wife and I were just laying down and she's like on the adoption website and she's like, yeah, can you get another one? And yeah, so we got Belly. So we got another French bulldog and yeah, Hogarth's still going around. He's awesome. And they're a blast, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, when I heard the nails on the floor earlier, I'm at my office now, but if I was at my house, you'd hear the same thing. Banks wouldn't be walking around. But all right, next thing. from a lifestyle standpoint, we talked about the bulldog. You are, I knew this as soon as I met you, and I've kept up. I mean, you're very into fitness. And a lot of people are, right? That's a, fortunately, that's a good thing. It's becoming more and more like in our society, people really lean in on health, diet, nutrition, all that stuff. But you've been doing it a while. Why is it so important to you? Like, what's your mentality around it?
I love team sports, but I also love finding out what I'm capable of. There's a of course, I just forgot his name. There's a philosopher that said it would be a shame for a man to live a full life and not know what he was capable of.
Yeah.
I think it was Socrates. And I just love challenging myself. And I find it as an opportunity daily. I work out anywhere from 4 to 6 times a week. I mean, there might be one day a week where I kind of just, I get less than 5,000 steps or I'm just walking.
Right.
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 What I love daily, specifically, right, I've been doing CrossFit since 2013. I love the challenges it proposes to me, but I also love the ability to try something new, like trying a new CrossFit movement or a new workout movement. You know, a couple years ago, I got into some sprint triathlons. So I just love getting uncomfortable because I truly do believe that it spills over into the rest of your life. You know,
1,000%
have challenges and we all are presented with very difficult life situations like our French bulldog passing. But
yeah,
how you react to that and then how you make your next step can be game changers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I you know, people that aren't as into like doing something hard every day or whatever, it's hard to get them to understand this, but I can say that if I do a hard workout every day or an ice bath or whatever it is, if I can be the dictator of the hardest thing that I face on most days,
yes,
then everything else is a breeze, right? Yeah. Most days. Yeah. Now, there are some days that you're faced with some really tough adversity that is harder than a workout. Yeah. What's that?
You get hit in the face and something you didn't expect hits you. Yeah.
Right. But the workouts, like my baseline is every day I'm going to go through something hard and I'm choosing to do that. So when I'm hit with those really hard things and those big hurdles in life, I've been here before. I know how to deal with hard things. I'm tough because I've chosen to be tough through workouts and doing hard things. And it allows me, and this is what I want to teach my kids and put them in situations where they have to fight through adversity. It makes every, you just said it, every other aspect in my life is made easier because I choose to do some hard things every day, right?
Yeah.
And, or most days.
Yeah, exactly. My word for 2025, I don't know if you follow Jesse Itzler. I'm sure you do.
I do. Yeah.
Calendar Club, Misogi, Kevin's Rule. My word for 2025 is figure outable. It goes into business. It goes into relationships. It goes into day to day. You know, if something hits you in the face, like, all right, let's figure it out. You know, what's the next?
There's a, I did a podcast early on when we started doing, it was a solo podcast on the book, Everything is Figure Outable. I don't have it in front of me right now. I can't think of the author off the top of my head, but it's a female. But that book is just about that. There's nothing in life, like some things might not, like, you might not be able to get the result you want or that was preconceived that you thought you were going to get, but every single thing in life has a solution.
Yeah.
There is a solution.
You
and
solution, but someone in your network does. And someone
exactly. And
expert.
Exactly right. And one of my guests recently said this, and I love it. If you're breathing right now and you're alive, you have successfully gotten through everything you've been faced with in life.
Yes.
Like you might be going through it right now, but if you're alive, you are batting 1,000.
Yeah.
100% success rate. So I love that perspective, even through the hard times. The only way you can't figure something out is once you've passed away. You're gone at that point. But leading up to that, if you're still going, you've figured it all out or you're in the process of it. That's an interesting perspective that stuck with me, you know, for the last couple months. So,
yeah. One thing I would say too, I would say about fitness and why I love it so much and just getting uncomfortable is it's an opportunity to speak to myself positively. I don't think enough of us do that often. Yep. And
It's astounding. If you just speak to yourself, even during a workout, like, Tim, you got this. Like, come on, Tim, you could do two more. Just how big of an exponential opportunity that is for you in the future, just over time, you know, bit by bit by bit, it adds up a lot. And
yeah,
just positive mindset, man. I love working on it daily. I'm always like,
yeah,
in the workout almost every day. I'm like, I'm here to work out tomorrow. Like, I'm here.
Yeah.
And it also helps me check my ego, right? Like, it's okay. Pull back a little bit. Do a little less.
That's right.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's good, man. How do you, I'm curious, so it seems like you're pretty self-disciplined with the working out and everything around that. And you can speak to this around fitness, but also in other aspects. What are some things you do to curate or force accountability?
I tell a lot of people about, like, my close people about what I'm doing and what I'm trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's crazy. Like, that you're insane. And then,
yeah.
But by putting it out there, it keeps me accountable, because it's like, hey, I'm not going to let myself down, but I don't want to look bad and not follow right. through. So I do think sharing with people, even if it's a big story or like a big goal, like, just tell people, because you'd be surprised, man. Can you curse on here? I keep holding.
Yeah. You're good. Too much. I can see you getting fired up. Let's go.
So here's a big fucking goal. I want to buy the Minnesota Twins, and the Minnesota Twins is available on market. I started telling a couple people about this, and I've only told a few people about this, but you got me going. You're right. Next thing you know, I'm talking to some people, and they're like, you got to speak with so-and-so. You got to speak with so-and-so. They're part of an ownership group that owns it, but a basketball team. And so you just start putting that out there. Now, I'm not going to buy them yet. It hasn't come together. But, man, you start putting it out there, you'd be surprised at what your people in your circle are connected to and how they can help you. So,
dude, you're speaking to my heart.
And people are like, you're crazy. I'm like, okay, I always try to think of myself, like, when I was 10 or 15, like, what did Tim want to do? You know, would Tim be proud of where Tim is today, right? Man, Tim loves baseball. I loved baseball. I would always go there with my grandma, love her dearly. She's still here, thankful. I want to buy the Twins. That opportunity doesn't come up available often, right?
Right.
Let's start talking to some people, you know, and then next thing you know, I'm talking to people that are worth $200 million, $500 million, $1 billion. You're like, holy geez. And you would have never known if I would have never put that out there, you know?
Yeah.
So another one, I'll put it in the universe. I want to buy CrossFit. So the brand.
CrossFit, the brand.
Yeah, it's owned by Berkshire Hathaway. So I'll just put that out there.
Let's go.
Let's put it all out there.
No, I love it, man. And I like to point this out when it happens, because when a guest says something that gives me goosebumps, I like to let them know, because when you throw that, like, I don't hear that and think, oh, well, yeah, okay. Yeah. No, freaking figure it out. Like, yeah. Everything is figure outable, right? You can't go write a check right now to buy the Minnesota Twins or buy CrossFit, but you've got a network that you're building. That you mentioned earlier, 6 degrees of Tim Olson.
Yes.
You can figure this out. And if buying the Minnesota Twins means you have 10% of the watermelon instead of the whole grape.
1%.
1%. Whatever it is. Yeah. So I love that, man. And I love the idea of so many people struggle with.
It might be the next one, right? But it gets the ball moving. And then they go for sale in 10 years, and I'm in a much different position myself, and my network's different. Then it's like, hey, Tim, didn't you want to, you know? You never know.
We did something. This is on a smaller scale, but I want to speak to the power, because I haven't really shared it that much. I've shared the goal, but I haven't shared much context around it. In our business, we sat down in December to set some pretty high goals for the lending company, that side of the business. Excuse me.
No.
And we set a goal of, and I'm going to give some context around this, because most people that have followed me on social media know what the goal is, but they don't know the context.
Yep.
We set a goal of making over $20 million in hard money loans for 2025. That was our big goal. To give context there, we made about $7 million in loans for 2024. Leading into the fall of 2024, our biggest, or we had just recently, like, celebrated our biggest month, which was our first month exceeding $1 million in loans, right? That was a big month for us. Now, granted, we just started like a year and a half ago, but That was a big month. So we said how we were like whiteboarding, brainstorming all the ways that we're going to get to 20 million. We came up with a bunch of stuff, but the big one that we kept coming back to is we've got to publicly share this goal. And because our network, everybody in our network knows who we are. We've built a decent reputation. And if we just put it out into the universe, we'll get some help from that network. So we said, okay, let's back into the goal. We're going to make our first quarter goal of 7 million in loans, which is to us at that point in December, like, I don't know how the hell we're going to do it, but we're going to throw it out there. So fast forward to last week. In a three-day period, now we're recording this middle of February, so this was the first week in second week in February. Yeah, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we made over $1 million in loans. And it wasn't a $1 million loan. It was several loans that equaled over $1 million, where just a few months ago, we were celebrating a $1 million loan month. Yes. We did it in 3 days. We'll make this month in February, we're probably going to exceed $3 million in loans. And we're way ahead of our target of 7 million for the first quarter. Just 2 months ago, we literally set that goal, not having any clue that it was possible. We just could throw it out there, and our network has delivered and helped us get there. So
I love that.
That's not as big as buying the Minnesota Twins,
it speaks to the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Just throw it out there. And that has like curating.
Yes.
Curating accountability through publicly showing and sharing what the goals are. Number one, your network shows up for you. But number two, I don't want to tell somebody I didn't fight to the very end to hit my goal. And if I share it with everybody, now I've got everybody asking me, how you doing? How you doing with your goal? And I do that now with my personal goals, my relationship goals, all that. I publicly share it with everybody.
Yes. Man, yeah. I love that. Awesome. Yeah. We're on the same wavelength because you get people behind you, you get momentum, and
you're getting me fired up, man. I get excited talking about this stuff. So, yeah. Cool. But Tim, I mean, we've gone for an hour, man. I feel like I could go on for a couple more with you, but let's kind of wrap things up with, I want you to share with folks, you know, that this is likely reaching an audience that you may not have, or that may not be familiar with you, and they've kind of gotten to learn about you through this last hour. But share with folks, number one, the best way to reach you. We're going to drop all your links and stuff in the show notes, but like the best way if they want to reach out and learn more about what you're doing. But number two, promote your business, man, Aspire Finance, like your what your avatar is, who you're looking for, and how folks can connect and learn more about it.
I appreciate that. Yeah. So the best way to connect me is tim@aspirefinance.com. What I'm looking to have conversations with is, you know, businesses that are doing anywhere from 10 million in revenue up to a couple billion. And they're looking for an additional capital partner where I can facilitate, you know, 20 to 70% of their capital needs annually. Right. So pretty industry agnostic, a lot of healthcare focus, a lot of manufacturing focus. So if you think of like MRIs, ultrasounds, or, you know, punch brakes or lasers or turning machines or milling machines, a lot of that type of stuff. So
how about agriculture, farming?
Yeah, it depends. So I'll be real brief on farming and agriculture. When it comes to that, there's a lot of captives in there. And what a captive is if you think of John Deere Finance, yep. And you think of John Deere, right? You think of, hey, there's a big old, you know, John Deere piece of equipment over there. Wonder how they finance it. Well, John Deere has their own internal financing, which is called captive financing. So agriculture's very, very well built out, but I will look at it from time to time. But a lot of cranes, you know, heavy construction equipment, stuff like that.
Yep. Cool. Yeah, really good, man. And I'm going to encourage the listeners. Yeah.
And then find me.
What's that?
Yeah, find me on LinkedIn. Tim Olson, yeah. Ethan, you know, there's a lot of them, but Aspire Finance specifically. I love sharing on LinkedIn. And if you want to take anything away from this, is just follow what Jason does, is just be consistent. Like, you know, starting a podcast, man, kudos to you. I talked to you about it before recording, but I wanted to say it on the recording, man. That's not simple to do because there's a lot of things that happen. Life happens, birthdays happen, you get sick. You don't film enough podcasts in advance and you got to scramble to fill one out. But man, you've been very consistent for almost 16 months.
Yeah, we started. Our first episode was December, like the beginning of December of 23. So,
and you know, just kind of start seeing that kind of escalation. And, you know, you highlighted it about, you know, your capital fund where, you know, just in December you did $1 million. Well, it just, but you've been doing it for over a year, right? So it's just keep doing it, keep doing it. And so on LinkedIn, I love posting daily. I don't know about what, it's whatever's on my mind, but it's usually personal development, fitness related, and maybe some business. So.
Yeah, I'll be the first to admit LinkedIn is a platform that, I mean, I have a page. We use Legacy Digital for all of our social media. So they're active on there for 608B Capital and the podcast and everything. But I have to do a better job of learning the platform because I'm very active on Facebook. Probably, I'd say, semi-active on Instagram. I'm learning more about that platform. But in LinkedIn is one that I hear so many folks repeat the same thing you just said, how, you know, it's, and you've done, like, you've posted, would you say, every week or every day since, how long?
Since, I think, September.
Okay. That's amazing, man.
About LinkedIn, one thing I'll say, I'll give credit to Jeremy Dyer. He's the one that started Starting Point Capital, where we raised capital through. In about a two-year time frame or a little bit more, he's raised over $40 million, mostly through LinkedIn.
It's amazing.
Just putting yourself out there. And to your point earlier, we talked about this pre-recording. It's people get to know, like, and trust you, and they're able to do that through your podcast, and they're able to do that through LinkedIn and social medias, and just provide value without asking for anything. And over time, people will start coming to you.
And another point, I don't want to drag this on too long because the listeners have been with us for an hour, but I do want to make this point, or kind of hammer the point that you've already made. Consistency, man. And part of the consistency is, especially with content like the podcast and videos and LinkedIn stuff that you're doing, don't get too consumed with the metrics, the likes, the comments, because you made a good point earlier where, and we see it all the time, where we post daily, right? Whether it's on my personal page or through our different pages with Legacy Digital, they're handling. And some posts might get 5 likes, some might get 50. You know, we don't really pay too much attention to that. They do. They track those metrics. But how many times, and you said this earlier, have you been in Target and somebody comes up, Jason, I loved your podcast episode, or Tim, man, that post you made about whatever.
Yep.
I love that. That person, not only did you not see them comment or like it, you didn't even know they were following along. And people just, I mean, I get it now that I'm actually producing content, but I used to wonder, like, why, you know, if you see it and you like it, just hit the like button and show support. But most people, myself included, don't always operate that way. They see it, they store it, they get value from it, and they move on. So more people are seeing and appreciating the content you're producing than you might see in the metrics, and just don't even pay attention to the metrics.
Last thing I'll say really is, what a great way to build a tribe, right? Your tribe attracts your tribe, and people that are going to reach out to you, they know, like, and trust you through your post and podcast, and they already kind of know you, you know? So, yeah.
So, Tim, I love it, man. I love, we covered a lot of ground there in the last hour or so. With the theme of this podcast, kind of this all-in mindset, no looking back. Well, your timeline is a sequence of several things of that, right? You started at the bank. You left the bank to go into equipment finance, and you leveraged that to get into some other things you were in, and now what you're in now. But every step of the way, it was, all right, take this last hat off, take what I've learned from it, apply it to what I'm moving into now, and there's no looking back. And, like, I love that about your story, and you have a lot of story to continue moving forward to, including, I'm writing it down and I'm going to hold you accountable to the Minnesota Twins and CrossFit. When you do buy the Twins, I expect some tickets or something, because I am going to blast that goal out here and hopefully connect you with the resource to get you there. So
I'll let you take batting practice out in the
field. Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. So, but Tim, I appreciate your time, man. I'm glad we were able to sit down and do this. And I'm going to be following along and supporting every step of what you've got going moving forward. And I know you'll do the same with us. But appreciate you sharing your story and all your wisdom on burning the ships, my man.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Burning the Ships. I want to give a special thanks to our sponsor, 608B Capital, helping real estate investors secure fast, reliable funding to fuel their boldest moves. If you're ready to take your investing to the next level, visit 608bcapital.com to learn more. If you found value in today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but it also helps us reach more people who are ready to burn the ships and commit fully to their goals. And don't forget to share the episode with someone who needs that extra push to take bold action. I'll leave you with this. Burning the ships isn't just about removing the option to retreat. It's about unlocking the courage to charge forward. No matter the odds, the past is behind you and the future is yours to conquer. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time on Burning the Ships.